This is Audible.
If you attempt to steal back life, death will take its retribution elsewhere, balancing the scales. As above, so below. As above, so below. So below. As above, so below.
Fodder and Stoughton Audio presents Kingdom of the Wicked by Kerry Maniscalco, read for you by Marisa Collins. For my grandmother, Victoria Marie Nucci, and my aunt, Caroline Nucci, and for my great-grandparents, who immigrated from Shaka, Sicily to America, whose restaurant inspired much of this story. This may be a fantasy, but the love of family found within these words is very real. Flectere sine queo superos, aceronta movebo. If I cannot bend the will of heaven, I shall move hell. Virgil, Aeneid. Prologue. Outside, wind rattled the wooden chimes in warning. In the distance, waves crashed against the shore. The frantic whispers of water growing louder, as if the sea was a mage summoning violence. On this date, for nearly a decade now, the storm followed the same pattern. Next, thunder would roll in quicker than the tide, with lightning cracking electric whips across an unforgiving sky. The devil demanded retribution, a blood sacrifice for power stolen. It wasn't the first time he'd be cursed by witches, nor would it be the last. From her rocking chair near the fire, Nonna Maria monitored the twins while they chanted protection charms she'd taught them, a cornicello clutched tightly in each of their little fists. Pushing their howling gusts from her mind, she listened closely to the words Vittoria and Emilia whispered over the horn-shaped amulets, their matching dark heads bent in concentration.
By earth, moon, and stone, bless this hearth, bless this home.
It was the start of their eighth year, and Nonna tried not to worry over how quickly they were growing. She pulled her shawl closer, unable to ward off chills in the small kitchen. It had little to do with the temperature outside. As much as she tried to ignore it, sulfur snuck in through the cracks, along with the familiar plumeria and orange-scented breeze, raising the graying hair she'd swept up from her neck. Had she been alive, her own human grandmother would have called it an omen and spent the evening on her knees in the cathedral, rosary clutched close, praying to saints. The devil was on the prowl. Or one of his wicked brothers was. A sliver of worry slid in as quick and smooth as one of her paring knives, lodging itself near Nonna's heart. It had been an age since the last sighting of the Malvagi. Hardly anyone spoke of the wicked anymore, except in stories told to frighten children into staying in their beds at night. Now, adults laughed at the old folk tales, all but forgetting the seven ruling princes of hell. Nonna Maria never would. Their legends were burned into her mind, branding her with a bone-deep sense of dread. The area between her shoulders prickled, as if their midnight eyes were upon her, watching from the shadows. It was only a matter of time before they came looking, if they hadn't begun to already. One didn't steal from the devil and go unpunished. Her focus darted back to the twins. Like the churning Tyrrhenian sea, there was a restlessness about them tonight, one that spoke of unseen trouble to come. Vittoria's charms were rushed, and Emilia stumbled over hers, trying to keep up. A twig popped in the fire, quickly followed by another, the sound like wishbones snapping over their spellbooks, a warning in its own right. Nonna gripped the arms of her rocking chair, her knuckles turning the color of the blanched almonds lying on the counter.
Calmati. Not so fast, Vittoria, she scolded. You'll have to begin again if you don't do it correctly. Do you want to gather grave dirt alone in the dark?
Much to Nonna's dismay, Vittoria didn't appear as frightened as she should have. The thought of wandering around a graveyard under the light of a full moon and an angry storm seemed appealing to the child. She pursed her lips before offering a slight shake of her head. It was Amelia who answered, though, giving her sister a warning look.
We'll be more careful, Nonna.
To prove her point, Amelia held up the vial of holy water they'd gotten from the monastery and tipped it over their amulets, allowing one drop to sizzle over each. Silver and gold, an offering of balance between light and dark, a gift for what had been stolen all those years ago. As above, so below. Pacified, Nonna watched as they finished their charm, relieved when white sparks rose in the flames before burning red again. Another year, another victory. They'd tricked the devil once more. Eventually, there'd come a day when the charms wouldn't work, but Nonna refused to think of that now. She glanced at the windowsill, pleased by the dried orange slices laid out in even rows. Lavender sprigs hung to dry over the mantel, and the tiny stone island was covered with both flower and fragrant herbs, waiting to be tied into neat bunches. Verbena, basil, oregano, parsley, and bay leaves. The scents mingled pleasantly. Some were for their celebratory dinner, and others for their charms. Now that the protection ritual was done, they might enjoy their meal. Nonna looked at the clock on the mantel. Her daughter and son-in-law would arrive from the family restaurant soon, bringing with them laughter and warmth. Storms and omens or not, all would be well in the DiCarlo home. The flames settled, and Amelia sat back, biting her nails. A nasty habit Nonna was determined to break. The child spit a nail clipping out and went to toss it on the floor.
Amelia!
Nonna's voice rang loudly in the small room. The child started, dropping her hand, and gave a sheepish look.
In the fire. You know better than to leave things for those who practice le arti oscure.
Sorry, Nonna,
Amelia mumbled. She chewed her lip, then her grandmother waited for the question she knew was coming.
Will you tell us about the dark arts again? Or the malvagi?
Vittoria added, always interested in stories of the wicked. Even on nights they were forbidden from uttering such names.
Please?
We shouldn't speak of dark things aloud. It invites trouble.
They're just stories, Nonna,
Amelia said quietly.
If only that were true.
Nonna Maria traced a protection charm over her heart, finishing it with a kiss to her fingertips, and exhaled. The twins exchanged triumphant grins. It was impossible to keep the legends from the girls, no matter if it filled their heads with dreams of the seven princes of hell. Nonna feared they romanticized demons too much. It was best, she decided, to remind them why they should be wary of beautiful creatures without souls.
Wash your hands and help roll the dough. I'll talk while you make the buziate.
Their matching smiles warmed the chills still clinging to Nonna, brought on by the storm and its warning. The little corkscrew pasta served with tomato pesto was one of the girls' favorite dishes. They'd be pleased to find cassata already waiting in the icebox. Though the sweet ricotta sponge cake was an Easter specialty, the girls loved it on their birthday. Even with all of their precautions, Nonna was unsure how much sweetness would remain in their lives and spoiled them often. Not that she required extra incentive to do so. The grandmother's love was its own sort of powerful magic. Amelia pulled the mortar and pestle from the shelf, face strained in concentration, as she gathered up the olive oil, garlic, almonds, basil, pecorino, and cherry tomatoes for the pesto alla trapanese. Vittoria removed the damp cloth from the mound of dough and began rolling the pasta as Nonna had taught her. 8 years old, and they already knew their way around the kitchen. It was unsurprising. Between their home and the restaurant, they practically grew up in one. They both peered up from thick lashes, their expressions identical masks of anticipation. Vittoria said impatiently, "Well, are you going to tell us a story?" Nonna sighed.
"There are 7 demon princes, but only 4 the Carlos should fear. Wrath, greed, envy, and pride. One will crave your blood. One will capture your heart. One will steal your soul. And one will take your life."
"The wicked,"
Vittoria whispered, her tone almost reverent. "The Malvagi are demon princes who stalk the night, searching for souls to steal for their king, the devil. Their hunger ravenous and unyielding, until dawn chases them away." Nonna continued, slowly rocking in her chair. The wood creaked, covering the sound of the storm. She nodded toward their tasks, making sure they held up their end of the bargain. The girls settled into their work.
"The 7 princes are so corrupted by sin that when they cross into our world, they can't bear being in the light and are cursed to only venture out when it's dark. It was a punishment sent from La Prima Strega many years ago, well before man roamed the earth."
"Where is the first witch now?" Amelia asked, an edge of skepticism creeping into her little voice. "Why hasn't she been seen?" Nonna thought carefully.
"She has her reasons. We must respect them."
"What do the demon princes look like?"
Vittoria asked, though she must have had this part memorized by now.
"They appear human, but their ebony eyes are tinged red, and their skin is hard as stone. Whatever you do, you must never speak to the wicked. If you see them, hide. Once you've caught a demon prince's attention, he'll stop at nothing to claim you. They are midnight creatures, born of darkness and moonlight, and they seek only to destroy. Guard your hearts. If given the chance, they'll rip them from your chests and guzzle your blood as it steams in the night."
No matter that they were soulless creatures who belonged to the devil, or they'd kill them on sight, the twins were enchanted by these dark and mysterious princes of hell. One more so than the other, as fate would have it.
"But how will we know when we meet one?" Vittoria asked. "What if we can't see their eyes?"
Nonna hesitated. They'd already heard so much, and if the ancient prophecy held true, she feared the worst was yet to come.
"You just will."
Steeped in family tradition, Nonna Maria taught the magical ways of hiding from both humans and the midnight creatures. Each year on their birthday, they gathered herbs from the tiny garden behind their home and made charms of protection. They wore amulets blessed in holy water, freshly turned grave dirt, and sparkling shafts of moonlight. They recited words of protection and never spoke of the Malvagi when the moon was full. More importantly, they were never without their amulets. Amelia's cornicello was made of silver and Vittoria's gold. The girls weren't allowed to bring them together, or something terrible would happen. According to Nonna, it would be like forcing the sun and moon to share the sky, bringing the world into an eternal twilight. There, the princes of hell could escape their prison of fire for good, murdering and stealing souls of the innocent until the human world turned to ash, like their nightmare realm. After they devoured their dinner and cake, the twins' mamma and papa kissed them goodnight. Tomorrow they'd begin helping in the family restaurant's busy kitchen, their first real dinner service. Too excited for sleep, Amelia and Vittoria giggled on their shared mattress,
swinging their horn amulets at each other like tiny fairy swords, pretending to fight the Malvagi.
When I grow up, I want to be a green witch, Amelia said later, cradled in the nook of her sister's arms. I'll grow all kinds of herbs and have my own trattoria. My menu will be crafted of magic and moonlight, like Nonna.
Yours will be even better. Vittoria's grip tightened in comfort.
By then,
I will be queen, and I'll make sure you have whatever you like.
One night, they decided to be brave. Nearly a month had passed since their eighth birthday, and Nonna Maria's dire warning seemed a lifetime ago. Vittoria thrust her amulet at her sister, her face determined.
Here, she commanded. Take it.
Amelia hesitated only a minute before clasping the golden horn in her palm. A shimmering, lavender-black light exploded from their amulets, startling Amelia enough that she dropped her sister's necklace. Vittoria swiftly fastened it back where it belonged, brown eyes wide as the glittering light abruptly faded. Both girls remained silent. Whether in fear or fascination, they couldn't be sure. Amelia flexed her hand, trying to work out the pin-prickling sensation crawling under her skin. Vittoria watched, her face hidden in shadow. Nearby, the hellhound howled up at the moon, though later they'd convinced themselves it was only the wind snarling through the cramped streets of their quarter. They never told anyone what they'd done, and never spoke of the strange, inky purple light. Not even to each other, and especially not to Nonna Maria. Since they pretended the incident away, Amelia didn't tell her sister she'd been irrevocably changed. From that evening forward, whenever she held her cornicello and concentrated, she saw what she'd call luccicare, a faint shimmer or aura surrounding a person. The only exceptions being herself and her twin. If Vittoria also possessed this new talent, she never admitted so. It was the first of many secrets the twins would keep from each other, and would prove deadly for one.
Chapter 1 10 years later. Nonna Maria buzzed around the kitchen like she'd guzzled every drop of espresso in our restaurant. Her mood was downright frantic. My twin was late for dinner service, and our grandmother saw it as a portent of doom. Especially since Vittoria was out the night before a holy day. Goddess forbid. The fact that the moon was not only full, but also a putrid shade of yellow, had Nonna muttering the kind of warnings that normally made my father bolt the doors. Thankfully, he and Uncle Nino were in the dining room with a frosty bottle of limoncello, pouring after-dinner drinks for our customers. No one left Sea and Vine without sipping the dessert liqueur, and feeling the utter satisfaction and bliss that followed a good meal.
Mock me all you like, but it's not safe. Demons are prowling the streets, searching for souls to steal.
Nonna chopped cloves of garlic for the scampi, a knife flying across the worn cutting board. If she wasn't careful, she'd lose a finger.
Your sister is foolish to be out.
She stopped, immediately shifting her attention to the little horn-shaped amulet around my neck. Worry lines carved a deep path around her eyes and mouth.
Did you see she was wearing a cornicello, Emilia?
I didn't bother responding. We never took our amulets off, not even while bathing. My sister broke every rule except that one, especially after what happened when we were 8. I briefly closed my eyes, willing the memory away. Nonna still didn't know about the luccicare I could see shimmering around humans while holding my amulet, and I hoped she never would.
Mama, please.
My mother raised her gaze to the ceiling, as if the goddess of sky might send an answer to her prayers in the form of a lightning bolt. I wasn't sure if the bolt was meant for Nonna or my mother.
Let's get through dinner service before worrying about the wicked. We have more pressing problems at the moment.
She nodded to the sauté pan. The garlic is starting to burn.
Nonna mumbled something that sounded suspiciously like, "So will their souls in hell if we don't save them, Nicoletta." And I bit my lip to keep from smiling.
"Something's terribly wrong. I feel it in my bones. If Vittoria isn't home soon, I'll go looking for her myself. The Malvagi won't dare to steal her soul around me."
Nonna brought her cleaver down on an unsuspecting mackerel, its head flopping to the limestone floor.
I sighed. We could have used it to make fish stock.
Nonna was really getting herself worked up. She was the one who taught us the value of using every part of an animal. Bones, however, could only be used for stock, not spells. At least, those were the rules for us De Carlos. Le arti oscure was strictly forbidden. I scooped the fish head into a bowl to give to the alley cats later, banishing thoughts of the dark arts. I poured some chilled wine for Nonna, adding orange slices and sugared peels to sweeten it. In moments, condensation bloomed like morning dew across the glass. It was mid-July in Palermo, which meant the air was stifling at night, even with our windows open, coaxing a breeze. It was especially hot in the kitchen now, though during colder months I still wore my long hair up because of the soaring temperatures created by our oven fires. C and Vine, the De Carlo family trattoria, was known across Sicily for our sinfully delicious food. Each evening, our tables were crowded with hungry patrons, all waiting to dine on Nonna's recipes. Lines formed in the late afternoons, no matter the weather. Nonna said simple ingredients were her secret, along with a touch of magic. Both of those statements were true. "Here, Nonna." We weren't supposed to use magic outside of our home, but I whispered a quick spell, and using the condensation dripping onto the stone, slid the drink along the counter in front of her. She paused long enough in her worrying to sip the sweet red wine. My mother mouthed her thanks when my grandmother's back was turned, and I grinned. I wasn't sure why Nonna was so agitated tonight. Over the last several weeks, starting around our 18th birthday, my twin missed quite a few dinner services, and had snuck in well past sunset, her bronze cheeks flushed and her dark eyes bright. There was something different about her, and I had a strong suspicion it was because of a certain young vendor in the market. Domenico Nucci Jr. I'd stolen a peek at her diary, and had seen his name scribbled in the margins before guilt had overtaken me, and I tucked it back under the floorboard where she'd hidden it. We still shared a room on the second floor of our small, crowded home, so thankfully she didn't notice my snooping. "Vittoria's fine, Nonna." I handed her some fresh parsley to garnish the shrimp. "I told you, she's been flirting with the Nucci boy who sells arancini for his family near the castle. I'm sure he's busy with all the pre-festival celebrations tonight. I bet she's passing out fried rice balls to everyone who's overindulged. They need something to soak up all that sacramental wine." I winked, but my grandmother's fear didn't abate. I set the rest of the parsley down and tugged her close. "No demon is stealing her soul or eating her heart. I promise. She'll be here soon." "One day I hope you'll take signs from the goddesses seriously, bambina." "Maybe one day." But I'd heard stories about red-eyed demon princes my whole life and hadn't met one yet. I wasn't too worried things would suddenly change now. Wherever the wicked had gone, it seemed to be permanent. I feared them as much as I worried about dinosaurs suddenly returning from extinction to take over Palermo. I left Nonna to the scampi and smiled as music filtered in between the sounds of knives chopping and spoons stirring. It was my favorite kind of symphony, one that allowed me to focus entirely on the joy of creation. I inhaled the fragrant scent of garlic and butter. Cooking was magic and music combined. The crack of shells, the hiss of pancetta hitting a hot pan, the metallic clang of a whisk beating the side of a bowl, even the rhythmic thwack of a cleaver against a wooden cutting board. I adored each part of being in a kitchen with my family.
I couldn't imagine a more perfect way to spend an evening.
Sea and Vine was my future, and it promised to be filled with love and light.
Especially if I saved enough coin to purchase the building next door and expand our family business. I'd been experimenting with new flavors from across Italy and wanted to create my own menu one day. My mother hummed along while forming marzipan into fruit shapes.
He's a nice boy, Domenico.
He'd make a good match for Vittoria.
His mother is always pleasant.
Nonna tossed a flower-coated hand in the air, waving it around as if the idea of an engagement with a Nucci stunk worse than the streets of the nearby fish market.
Bah, she's too young to worry about marriage, and he's not Sicilian.
My mother and I both shook our heads. I had a feeling his Tuscan roots had little to do with Nonna's disapproval. If she had it her way, we'd live in our ancestral home in our little quarter of Palermo until our bones turned to dust. Nonna didn't believe anyone else could watch over us as well as she could, especially a mere human boy. Domenico wasn't witch-born like my father, and therefore Nonna didn't think he could ever fully be trusted with our secret.
He was born here. His mother is from here. I'm fairly certain that makes him Sicilian, I said. Stop being grumpy. It doesn't suit someone as sweet as you.
She harrumphed, ignoring my blatant attempt to charm her. Stubborn as a mule, as my grandfather would have said. She picked up her carved wooden spoon and pointed it in my direction.
Sardines washed themselves onto the shore. Gulls didn't touch them. You know what that means? It means they're no fools. The devil's stirring the seas, and they'll have nothing to do with his offerings.
Mama, my mother groaned, and set the almond paste down.
A boat carrying kerosene crashed into the rocks last night. The oil killed the fish, not the devil.
Nonna shot my mother a look that would sink lesser souls to their knees.
You know as well as I do, it's a sign the Malvagi have arrived, Nicoletta. They've come to collect. You've heard of the bodies. The timing matched what was foretold. Is that a coincidence, too?
Bodies?
My voice shot up several octaves.
What are you talking about?
Nonna clamped her mouth shut. My mother whipped her head around, forgetting about the marzipan again. A look passed between them, so deep and meaningful that chills crept down my spine.
What bodies? I prodded. What was foretold?
Our restaurant was busier than normal while we prepared for the influx of people attending the festival tomorrow, and it had been days since I'd listened to gossip swirling around the marketplace. I hadn't heard anything about bodies. My mother gave my grandmother a look that said, "You started this, you finish it," and went back to her candy shaping. Nonna settled onto a chair she kept near the window, clasping her wine tightly. A breeze lifted the oppressive heat. Her eyes fluttered shut, as if soaking it in. She looked exhausted. Whatever was happening was bad.
Nonna? Please. What happened?
Two girls were murdered last week. One in Shaka, and one here in Palermo.
Shaka, a port town facing the Mediterranean Sea, was almost directly south of us. It was a little jewel on an island filled with visual treasure. I couldn't imagine a murder there,
which was ridiculous, since death didn't discriminate between paradise and hell.
That's awful. I set my knife down, pulse pounding. I looked at my grandmother. Were they human?
Nonna's sad look said it all.
Strega.
I swallowed hard. No wonder she was carrying on about the wicked returning. She was imagining one of us discarded in the streets, our souls being tortured by demons in hell, while our blood slipped through cracks in the stone, replenishing Earth's magic. I shuddered despite the sweat beading my brow. I didn't know what to make of the murders.
Nonna often chided me for being too skeptical, but I still wasn't convinced the Malvagi were to blame. Old legends claimed the wicked were sent to make bargains and retrieve souls for the devil, not kill. And no one had seen them wandering our world in at least 100 years. Humans murdered each other all the time, though, and they definitely attacked us when they suspected what we were. Whispers of a new band of Strega hunters reached us last week, but we'd seen no evidence of them. But now, if witches were being murdered, I was more inclined to believe human zealots were to blame. Which meant we needed to be even more careful to avoid discovery. No more simple charms where we could be seen. I tended to be overly cautious, but my sister was not. Her favorite form of hiding was not hiding at all. Maybe Nonna was right to be worried. What did you mean about the Malvagi coming to collect? I asked. Or it being foretold? Nonna didn't look happy about my line of questioning, but saw the determination in my eyes and knew I'd keep asking. She sighed. There are stories that claim the wicked will return to Sicily every few weeks, beginning now, searching for something that was stolen from the devil. This was a new legend. What was stolen? My mother stilled before shaping the marzipan again. Nonna sipped her wine carefully, gazing into it as if she might divine the future in the pulp floating on the surface. A blood debt. I raised my brows. That didn't sound ominous at all. Before I could interrogate her further, someone rapped on the side door where we brought in supplies. Over the chatter in the small dining room, my father called to Uncle Nino to entertain the dinner guests. Footsteps thudded down the hall, and the door creaked open.
Buonasera, Signore Di Carlo. Is Emilia here?
I recognized the deep voice and knew what he'd come to ask. There was only one reason Antonio Vincenzo Bernardo, the most newly appointed member of the Holy Brotherhood, ever called on me here. The nearby monastery relied heavily on donations and charity, so once or twice a month I made dinner for them on behalf of our family restaurant. Nonna was already shaking her head as I wiped my hands on a towel and set my apron on the island. I smoothed down the front of my dark skirts, cringing a little at the flowers splattered across my bodice. I looked like a queen of ash and probably stank like garlic. I swallowed a sigh. 18 and romantically doomed forever. Emilia, please. Nonna, there are already plenty of people in the streets celebrating before the festival tomorrow. I promise I'll stick to the main road, make dinner quickly, and grab Vittoria on the way back. We'll both be home before you know it.
No.
Nonna was out of her chair, ushering me back like a wayward hen toward the island and my abandoned cutting board.
You mustn't leave here, Emilia. Not tonight.
She clutched her own cornicello, her expression pleading.
Let someone else donate food instead, or you'll find yourself joining the dead in that monastery.
Mama, my mother scolded. What a thing to say! Don't worry, Nonna, I said. I don't plan on dying for a very, very long time. I kissed my grandmother, then snatched a half-formed piece of marzipan from the plate my mother was working on and popped it into my mouth. While I chewed, I stuffed a basket with tomatoes, fresh basil, homemade mozzarella, garlic, olive oil, and a small bottle of thick balsamic Uncle Nino brought from his recent visit to Modena. It wasn't traditional, but I'd been experimenting and loved the flavor of vinegar lightly drizzled on top. I added a jar of salt, a loaf of crusty bread we baked earlier, then quickly ducked out of the kitchen before I was wrangled into another argument. I smiled warmly at Fratello Antonio, hoping he couldn't hear Nonna condemning him and the entire monastery in the background. He was young and handsome for a member of the Brotherhood, just 3 years older than Vittoria and I. His eyes were the color of melted chocolate, and his lips always hinted at the sweetest smile. He'd grown up next door to us, and I used to dream about marrying him one day.
Too bad he'd devoted himself to chastity. I was certain half the kingdom of Italy wouldn't mind kissing his full mouth, myself included.
Buonasera, fratello Antonio.
I held my basket of supplies aloft, ignoring how odd it felt to call him brother when I had some very unsisterly thoughts about him. I've been experimenting again and am making a sort of caprese bruschetta combination for the Brotherhood tonight. Does that sound all right? For his sake, I hoped so. It was quick and easy, and though the bread tasted better brushed with olive oil and lightly grilled, it didn't require a fire to make.
It sounds heavenly, Emilia. And please, Antonio is fine. No need for old friends to stand on ceremony.
He gave me a shy nod.
Your hair looks lovely.
Grazie. I reached up and brushed my fingers against a flower. When we were younger, I began weaving orange blossoms and plumeria in my hair to set my twin and I apart. I reminded myself Antonio was involved with the Almighty Lord now and wasn't flirting with me, no matter how much I sometimes wished otherwise. While he studiously ignored the tinny sound of a pot hitting the stone floor, I internally cringed. I could only imagine what Nonna might toss next.
Most of the Brotherhood won't return to the monastery until later, he said. But I can help if you'd like.
Nonna's hysterics grew louder. He was polite enough to pretend he didn't hear her dire warnings of demons killing young women in Sicily and stealing their souls. I gave him my most winning smile, hoping it didn't look like a grimace. I'd like that very much. His attention slid behind me as Nonna's cries reached us, a tiny crease forming in his brow. Normally, she was careful around customers, but if she started screaming about the dark arts and protection charms where he could overhear her, our bustling family restaurant would be ruined. If there was one thing humans feared as much as the Malvagi, it was witches. Chapter 2. When we entered the monastery, I wasn't thinking about the devil, or the wicked soul-snatching demons Nonna swore were roaming the earth again. And while Antonio was undeniably pleasant to look at, I wasn't distracted by the slight curve of his mouth, or the flop of brown hair that fell across his brow whenever he glanced at me, then quickly looked away. Of all things, I was thinking about olive oil. For some reason, the corridor smelled faintly of burnt thyme, which made me wonder what thyme-infused olive oil might taste like, lightly brushed across crostini. I started daydreaming about my own restaurant again, about the menu I'd perfect. The crostini would make a fantastic antipasto. I'd top the toast off with some sliced mushrooms, sautéed with a pat of butter, garlic, and a splash of white wine. Maybe I'd even sprinkle a bit of pecorino and parsley to round out the flavors. We entered the room where kitchen supplies were kept, and I tucked those thoughts into a mental recipe folder and focused on the task at hand. I removed two cutting boards and a large bowl from the cupboard and laid everything out on the tiny table. I'll dice the tomatoes, you cube the mozzarella.
As you command, signorina.
We both reached inside the basket I'd brought, and Antonio's fingers brushed mine. I quickly yanked the tomatoes out and pretended a little thrill hadn't shot through me at the unexpected contact. Cooking alone with Antonio, in a darkened chamber in a near-forgotten section of the building, was not a bad way to pass the time. If he hadn't turned his life over to the Lord, this might have been the beginning of something between us. Now, unbeknownst to him, we were enemies. He belonged to the church, and I was a witch. And not just a human strega using folk magic against the evil eye and praying to Catholic saints. My family was something other, something not entirely human. Our power was feared, not respected. Along with 12 other witch families living secretly in Palermo, we were true daughters of the moon. Descendants of an actual goddess. There were more families scattered across the island, but for everyone's safety, we didn't interact with each other.
Our magic was a peculiar thing. While it only passed down the matriarchal line, it didn't manifest in all women. My witch-born mother didn't possess any supernatural abilities. Unless her baking could be counted, which I fully believed it could. Only someone goddess-blessed could craft desserts the way my mother did. At one time, there had been a council made up of the eldest members of each witch family. Nonna had been the leader in Palermo, but the coven disbanded soon after Vittoria and I were born. Stories were a little murky on the exact cause of the coven's collapse. But from what I'd gathered, old Sofia Santorini had invoked the dark arts, and something went very wrong, leaving her mind fragmented. Some said she used a human skull during a scrying session. Others claimed it was a black mirror. All agreed on the end result. Her mind was now trapped between realms. Humans grew suspicious of what they deemed sudden madness. Whispers of the devil followed. Soon, our world became too dangerous for real witches to meet, even secretly after that. So the 13 families of Palermo adopted a strict code of silence and stuck to themselves. Man had a funny way of blaming the devil for things he didn't like. It was strange that we were called evil when humans were the ones who enjoyed watching us burn.
So, aside from the demons invading our city, how are you?
Antonio didn't even try to hide his grin.
Good thing you've got a member of the Holy Brotherhood watching out for your trembling soul.
You're terrible.
True, but you don't really think so.
His dark eyes glittered as I tossed a diced tomato at him, my face flaming. He dodged it with ease.
Oh, at least I hope you don't.
I'll never tell. I dropped my attention to the plum tomato I was dicing. Once, when we were younger, I'd used a truth spell on him to see if he'd returned my feelings. Much to my delight, he had, and it felt like the world rejoiced with the discovery. When I told Nonna what I'd done, she made me scrub the kitchen from top to bottom by myself for a month. It hadn't exactly been the reaction I'd expected. Nonna said truth spells, while not explicitly part of the dark arts, should never be used on humans because they were part of Il Proibito. The forbidden were few, but held severe consequences. Free will was one of the most basic laws of nature in this world, beyond notions of light or dark magic, and should never be trifled with, which is why truth spells were off-limits. She used old Sofia Zandarini as a cautionary tale whenever we questioned her strict rules. Not every witch in our community shared the same views as Nonna, though. When the coven disbanded, some families, like my friend Claudia's, openly turned to the dark arts. They believed magic was magic and could and should be used however a witch wanted to use it. Blood, bones. Practitioners of the dark arts said all were viable tools. Vittoria tried using that logic on Nonna when we were 15 and ended up being the toilet chambermaid for a solid week.
Are you planning on sneaking away from the restaurant to celebrate tomorrow?
Antonio finished cubing the mozzarella and dutifully started chopping fresh basil. Maybe. It depends on how many customers we have and how late it gets. Honestly, I might just go home and try out some new recipes or read.
Ah, such a pious young woman, reading the good book.
I smiled down at my cutting board. The novel I was in the middle of was a good book. It just wasn't the good book. I refrained from telling him about the last chapter I read. The one where the hero expressed his love in many colorful and physically astounding ways. I supposed, technically, his stamina could be considered miraculous. I'd certainly become a believer of impossible expectations. Do you have any fun activities planned with the Brotherhood?
Fun is subjective. We'll probably be somewhere near the float, doing very serious and holy things.
I didn't doubt that. After Antonio's mother died suddenly last summer, he'd surprised everyone when he left home and started his religious life. Focusing on strict rules helped him grieve. He was doing much better now, and I was glad for him,
even if it meant we would never be. Here, I handed him the loaf of bread. You slice this, and I'll season the food. I scraped the diced tomatoes into a bowl and added the mozzarella and basil. A hit of olive oil, some minced garlic, and a pinch of sea salt all followed in rapid succession. Since the bread wasn't toasted, and the Brotherhood wouldn't be eating right away, I added a tiny bit of balsamic and stirred everything together. It wasn't exactly the presentation I'd choose, but it was more important for the food to taste good and not let the bread get soggy. "How was your trip?" I asked. "I heard you had to quell rumors of shapeshifters."
Yes. The heretics who came here from the Friuli district after the Inquisition are telling some interesting tales.
Mighty warriors, whose spirits leave their bodies in animal form to protect crops from malevolent forces, have indeed returned. He snorted.
At least that's the story we were told in the village I was assigned to. They're convinced there's a spirit assembly where a goddess is teaching them ways to protect themselves from evil. It's hard breaking old beliefs.
He met my gaze, and a world of trouble brewed in his eyes.
Your nonna isn't the only one who thinks demons have arrived.
A voice sounded in the corridor, too low to make out words clearly. Antonio held a finger to his lips. Whoever it was spoke again, a little louder. I still couldn't understand what they'd said, but they did not sound friendly. I fumbled for a knife. A hooded figure stepped into the chamber from the shadows and slowly extended its arms toward us.
Heathens!
Goosebumps rose like an army of the undead across my body. Nonna's cries of demons were replaced by my true fear of witch hunters. They'd found me, and there was no way I could use magic in front of them or Antonio without giving myself away. I jumped back so quickly, I tripped over my skirts and crashed into the basket of supplies. Silverware clattered to the ground. The bottle of my special balsamic shattered. Antonio clutched a wooden rosary that had been hidden under his robes and stepped forward, placing himself between me and the intruder.
"In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to be gone, demon."
Suddenly, the figure doubled over and giggled. Terror stopped coursing through me and was swiftly replaced with anger. I pushed myself away from the wall and glared. "Vittoria!" My twin stopped laughing and tossed her hood back.
"Don't mind me. I'm picturing the expression on your face again, and it's even more hilarious the second time."
Antonio slowly moved away, frowning down at the mess of glass and vinegar. I took a deep breath and silently counted to 10. "That wasn't funny. And you made me break my balsamic." Vittoria winced at the bits of glass scattered across the floor.
"Oh, Amelia, I'm really sorry."
She crossed the small room and crushed me against her in a giant hug. "When we get home, you can break my favorite white sage and lavender perfume as retribution." I blew out a long breath. I knew she sincerely meant it. She'd happily hand over her bottle and watch me smash it to bits. But I would never choose revenge. "I'll settle for a glass of the limoncello wine concoction you make instead. I'll make an entire pitcher." She kissed each of my cheeks loudly, then nodded to Antonio.
"You're very intimidating with the whole Lord's command, Brother Antonio. If I were a demon, I'm sure I would have definitely been banished back to hell."
"Next time I'll brandish holy water. Burn the devil right out of you."
You might need to bring a jug for that to work, especially if I summon him here."
He shook his head, then turned to me.
"I should be going. The Brotherhood needs my help preparing for tomorrow. Don't worry about the spilled vinegar. I'll come back later to clean it up. Thank you again for the food, Amelia. After the festival, I'll be traveling for a little while to dispel more superstitious rumors. But I hope to see you when I return."
Not two breaths after he left the chamber,
My stupid sister started dancing around the room, pretending to passionately kiss what I could only assume was Antonio. Oh, Amelia, I hope to see you when I return, preferably naked, in my bed, screaming the Lord's name. Stop that, I swatted at her, mortified. It can probably still hear you. Good, she wiggled her hip suggestively. Maybe it'll give him some ideas. It's not too late for him to leave the Brotherhood. There's no law or decree that says once he's accepted orders he needs to stay forever. There are plenty more interesting ways for a man to find religion. Maybe you can bathe in holy water and show him. You're impossibly blasphemous. And you are cherry red. Why not tell him how you feel? Or maybe you should just kiss him. Judging by the way he looks at you, I doubt he'd mind. Plus, the worst that can happen is he'll wax poetic on his religious orders, and you'll have to strangle him with his rosary. Come on, Venus. You've had enough matchmaking for one day. I grabbed her hand and hurried out of the room, relieved to find the corridor empty. No Antonio. Or any other member of the Holy Brotherhood. Thank the goddess. We rushed down the shadowy halls and didn't stop running until the monastery was a speck in the night. From the comfort of our home kitchen, Vittoria gathered blood oranges, limoncello, red wine, and a bottle of Prosecco. I watched from the island as she methodically added everything into a pitcher. A cup of this, a splash of that, a few sugared peels. Potions and perfumes were where her magic shined brightest, and it often translated to drinks. It was one of the few times she was entirely serious, and I loved watching her get lost in pure happiness. My mouth watered as she sliced oranges. This was my favorite drink by far. Vittoria was inspired by sangria, which in recent years had also become quite popular in France and England. Some English families who'd moved to Palermo brought their recipes with them, adding to our already eclectic history. Nonna said the Spanish had actually been influenced by an ancient Roman spiced wine called Hippocras. No matter where it originated, I simply loved the taste of orange juice mixed with the wine and the fizzy bubbles created from the Prosecco. Vittoria dipped a spoon into the mixture, stirred vigorously, then tasted it before pouring a generous glass for me. She swiped the bottle of limoncello and motioned us up the stairs. Hurry, Amelia, before anyone wakes up. Where were you earlier? I quietly shut the bedroom door behind us. Nonna was one step away from using all of our olive oil to see if evil entered sea and vine, and probably the rest of the island if she could. Vittoria collapsed onto her mattress, bottle of limoncello in hand, and grinned. I was summoning the devil. An ancient book whispered its secrets to me, and I've decided to take him as my husband. I'd invite you to the wedding, but I'm pretty sure the ceremony takes place in hell. I gave her a sharp look. If she didn't want to tell me the truth, fine. She could keep her secret romance with Domenico to herself for however long she liked. You need to stop drawing so much attention to yourself. Or else what? The Malvagi will come and steal my soul? Maybe I'll just sell it to them. Or else things will end badly for our family. Two girls were murdered last week. Both were witches. Antonio said people in the last town he visited were talking about shapeshifters. Now isn't the time to be joking about the devil. You know how humans get. First, it's shapeshifters, then demons, and then it's only a matter of time before witches are targeted. I know. Vittoria swallowed hard and looked away. I opened my mouth to ask what she'd been doing at the monastery, but when she turned back around, her gaze sparkled with mischief. So, have you had any special wine or spirits lately? I let my interrogation go. Special wine or spirits was her code for supernatural witch sense. She often used code to discuss topics we wanted to hide from humans, or nosy grandmothers. I nestled against my pillow and drew my knees up. Before I told my story, I whispered a spell of silence to cover the sound of our voices. Well, the other night, I dreamed about a ghost.
Wait!
Vittoria set a limoncello down and grabbed a diary, pen in hand and inkpot at the ready.
Tell me everything. Every last detail. What did the ghost look like? Did you see any shimmering outline or shadow? Or was it more like a thing you sensed? Did it speak to you? When did this happen? Right as you fell asleep, or later in the night?
It was closer to the morning. I thought I was awake at first. I sipped my drink and told her about the strange dream. The disembodied voice whispering too low to hear anything other than what sounded like the nonsensical language of dreams. Believing it had only been my overactive imagination at work, and not the first signs of the horror to come. Chapter 3. I quickly broke down fish carcasses for stock, ignoring the muffled crunch of bones. We were already deep into preparing for dinner service when I realized I'd forgotten my basket at the monastery. Since it was a holy day and crowds were already out en masse, I had to wait until Sea and Vine closed to retrieve my things. Maybe it was a blessing from the goddess. Since the Brotherhood would be out celebrating La Santuzza, the little saint, I wouldn't have to worry about seeing Antonio. I really didn't want to run into him after Vittoria's mortifying charades last night. She could get away with being bold and brazen, and people adored her for it. Unfortunately, it was a skill I hadn't mastered. I looked over at my sister, who'd been unusually quiet all morning. Something was troubling her. After I told her about my dream last night, she seemed on the verge of confiding in me. Instead of talking, she'd set her diary aside, turned over on her mattress, and went to sleep. I wondered if she'd gotten into a fight with her secret boyfriend. Maybe she was supposed to meet him in the monastery and he didn't show. I know we're going to be busy tonight, Vittoria said suddenly, breaking into my thoughts. But I need to leave a little early. Nonna scooted past my mother, who was making espresso to serve with the dessert, and hoisted a wicker basket full of tiny snails up onto the island and nodded to my twin. Here, boil these for the Babalucci. She swatted at my twin's hand. Not for too long. We don't want them turning to rubber. I raised my brows, waiting for Nonna to forbid my twin from leaving. She said nothing. While Vittoria quickly boiled a few handfuls of snails at a time, Nonna minced garlic and set a pan of olive oil on the fire. Soon we were all in a rhythm, and I pushed whatever was bothering my sister aside in favor of mastering my fish stock. I'd make her tell me everything later. Vittoria scooped snails out. Nonna added them to the oil and garlic, lightly fried them, and finished them off with salt, pepper, and fresh parsley. She whispered a blessing over the plates, thanking the food for its nourishment and the snails for their sacrifice. It was a small thing, and not necessarily magical, but I swore it made the food taste better. Nicoletta, Nonna called. My mother set her last tray of dessert aside and tossed a cloth over her shoulder. Bring your brother this bowl of Babalucci, and tell him to go outside and give a bite to anyone who looks hungry. It will help with the line. And it would draw more people into our trattoria. Nonna might not use magic directly on customers, but she was skilled in the art of luring humans in by using their own senses. One whiff of the fried garlic would have plenty of hungry patrons gracing our tables. Once my mother was gone, Nonna pointed her carved wooden spoon at us. Did you see the sky this morning? It was as red as the devil's blood. Tonight is not a night to be out. Stay in and work on your grimoires. Sew dried yarrow into your skirts. There's plenty to do at home. Are you wearing your amulets? I pulled mine from under my bodice. Vittoria sighed and did the same. Good.
You haven't taken them off, have you?
No, Nonna. I ignored the heaviness of my sister's gaze as it landed on me. I wasn't technically lying. She'd taken her amulet off when we were 8. I'd kept mine on. As far as I knew, neither one of us had ever removed them again. Nonna took a deep breath, seeming pacified.
Thank the goddess for that. You know what would happen otherwise.
Our world would turn to nightmares and ash. Vittoria held her arms straight out like she was a slow-moving demon and staggered forward. The devil will roam free. We will be bathed in the blood of innocence, our souls cursed to hell for eternity.
You shouldn't irk the goddesses who've sent signs, Vittoria. Those amulets could set the demon princes free. Unless you'd like to be responsible for the Malvagi entering this realm after La Prima locked them away, I'd heed the warnings.
Any bits of lingering humor left my sister's face. She turned back to the next batch of snails and gripped her cornicello tightly. I swallowed hard, recalling their hellhound we'd heard that night so long ago. Nonna had to be wrong. Her warning was more superstition. The devil and his entire demon realm was imprisoned. Plus, Nonna always said her amulets couldn't be brought together. I hadn't let them touch. I'd just held my sister's while still wearing mine. The princes of hell were where they belonged. No demons were roaming Earth. All was well. Still, when our grandmother's back was turned, Vittoria and I shared a long, silent look. Chapter 4. I stared at the dark monastery, unable to shake the feeling that it was staring back, its fangs bared in a vicious sneer, which was a sign Nonna's superstitions had managed to unnerve me after all. Unless a powerful witch had cast an unheard-of spell to animate limestone and glass, it was only an empty building. Grazie, Nonna, I said under my breath, not really feeling thankful at all. I headed for a wooden door set deep within shadows. Thick iron hinges groaned in protest as I slipped inside. Somewhere in the rafters above, a bird took flight, its wings beating in time with my heart. The Capuchin Monastery was less than a mile from our restaurant, and was one of the most beloved buildings in Palermo. Not due to its architecture, but because of the catacombs located within its holy walls. I liked it well enough during daylight, but couldn't shake the chill clinging to me in the dark. Now that it was completely empty, an eerie premonition crawled over my senses. Even the air felt strained, like it was holding its breath from some wicked discovery. Nonna's cries of demons continued to haunt me as I crept deeper inside the silent monastery and steeled myself against a growing sense of dread. I really didn't want to think about red-eyed, soul-stealing monsters invading our city, especially while I was alone. I hugged my arms to my chest and walked briskly down a darkened corridor lined with mummies. They'd been posed in standing positions, dressed in garments of their choosing, their clothing dating back hundreds of years. I tried not to notice their empty, lifeless stares as I hurried along. It was the quickest way to the room where I'd left my basket, and I cursed the Brotherhood for the creepy layout. Though it never bothered my sister. When we were younger, Vittoria wanted to wash and prepare the bodies of the deceased. Nonna didn't approve of her fascination with the dead, and thought it might lead to an obsession with le arti oscure. I was torn on the subject, but it didn't matter in the end. The Brotherhood chose our friend Claudia for that task. On rare afternoons, when we all weren't working and could walk along the beach, picking shells for moon blessings, Claudia shared stories of how the mummies came to be. I'd squirm my toes in the warm sand, trying to banish goosebumps. But Vittoria would lean forward, a hungry gleam in her eyes, ravenous for every morsel of information Claudia served us. I did my best to forget those morbid stories now.
A window was cracked open high above, allowing a gusty breeze to barrel through the corridor. It smelled of turned earth and salt, like a storm was blowing in. Fantastico. The last thing I needed was to get stuck running home in the rain. I moved swiftly through the darkness. One torch was lit at each end of the long corridor, leaving much of my path in shadow. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed movement and froze. I stopped walking, but the sound of cloth brushing against stone continued a good breath or so before falling silent too. Someone, or something, was here. My entire body buzzed with nerves. I shook my head. I was already scared about the Malvagi, and my mind was playing tricks on me. It was probably Vittoria again. I gathered what little bravado I could muster and forced myself to turn around, scanning the corridor of silent, watchful mummies for my sister. Vittoria? I stared into the shadows and almost screamed when one formed a denser silhouette that rose from behind the bodies. Who's there? Whatever it was, it didn't answer. I thought about the rumors Antonio mentioned yesterday and couldn't stop picturing a shapeshifter hiding in the dark. Little hairs on my arms stood on end. I swore I felt eyes on me. Tiny bells of warning sounded in my head. Danger lurked nearby. Nonna was right. Tonight was no night to be out. I was contemplating how quickly I could dash back outside when wings flapped in the rafters. I blew out a breath. There was no apparition or mythological shapeshifter or demon stalking me. Just a lost little bird. I probably frightened it more than it scared me. I slowly backed down the corridor and made my way to the next chamber, ignoring the jitters claiming my bones. I hurried into the room where I'd forgotten my basket and snatched it up, shoving my supplies back in, hands shaking the whole time. Stupid bird. The faster I gathered my things, the faster I could get Vittoria from the festival and go home. Then we'd borrow a bottle of wine and crawl into bed, drinking and laughing together over Nonna's dire proclamations about the devil, warm and snug in the safety of our room. A scraping of a boot against stone had me frozen in place. There was no mistaking that sound for the wings of a bird. I stood there, barely breathing, listening to an all-consuming silence. I reached for my cornicello in comfort. Then, something quietly began calling me. Slow and insistent. A silent buzzing I couldn't push aside. Goddess knows I was trying. It wasn't a strictly physical sound. More like a peculiar feeling in the pit of my stomach. Each time I considered running away, it grew more demanding. I gripped the knife from my basket in my other hand, then tiptoed down the corridor, pausing to listen at each chamber. My heart pounded with each step. I was half convinced it might stop working altogether if I didn't calm down. I took another step, followed by another, each one more difficult than the last. I strained against the drumming of my pulse, but no other sounds emerged from the darkness. It was as if I'd conjured the earlier noise from fear. But that feeling. I followed it farther into the monastery. At the very end of the next corridor, I halted outside a room with its door ajar. Whatever had been calling me led inside. I felt it. A slight tug in my center. A summoning I had no hope of fighting. I didn't know what sort of magic was at play, but clearly sensed it. I dropped my amulet and held my breath as I slipped in unseen, wary of what drew me. Nonna had always scolded my ability to sneak around undetected, but at present it felt more like a blessing than a curse. Inside, traces of time mixed with something metallic and some burnt paraffin wafted around. It took a moment for my vision to adjust. But once it did,
I bit down on a gasp, wondering how I'd missed him. Perhaps his preternatural stillness was to blame. Now that I was aware of his presence, I couldn't drag my gaze away. It was too dark to make out his features clearly, but his hair was a shade close to onyx, almost iridescent, like the wings of a raven catching sunlight. He was tall and powerfully built, like a statue of a Roman warrior, though his clothes were that of a fine gentleman. There was something about him that made me cling to the shadows, though, uneasy about detection. He loomed over a shrouded body. My mind churned with a dozen stories. Perhaps the love of his life died tragically before they could live out their dreams together, and he was angry with the world. Maybe she passed away peacefully in her sleep. Or maybe she was the murdered witch Nonna mentioned yesterday. The one whose body was discovered in our city. That thought was like a pail of ice water being poured over me. I stopped playing out mental fantasies and focused harder on the chamber. A strange assortment of half-blown-out candles were carefully placed in a circle around the stone altar where the body lay. Fragrant wisps of thyme wafted over to me again. Odd for a human man to set up candles and burn herbs. I recalled the scent of thyme last night, and wondered if he'd been here while Antonio and I were cooking a few chambers down. I stared at him, pulse thrumming, trying to determine if he was the source of magic that originally caught my attention. I didn't think so. There was no pull to him, only this chamber. Without warning, the air pressure suddenly felt wrong, like there was some distortion occurring in the space around us. Even the shadows seemed to bow in acquiescence. Right. It was a ludicrous thought. First, invisible ghost demons were following me through the corridors, and now this. There was nothing menacing about a young man saying goodbye to the girl he loved. Placing candles around her body wasn't so strange either. Plenty of people lit them while praying to their god. Once again, he suddenly bent toward the body, his hands skimming the area above her heart. And I waited for him to tug the shroud away and kiss his beloved goodbye one final time. When he removed his hand from beneath the cloth, his fingers were coated in blood. Slowly, as if in some devil's trance, he brought those fingers to his mouth and licked them. For a moment, I stared, unable to process what I'd seen. Everything inside me buzzed and went immobile. Fear and rage swirled together in a cacophony as I finally understood my earlier innate sense of wrongness. Warnings rang through me, screeching about bloodthirsty demons, but I was incensed beyond reason. This wasn't a midnight creature, born of darkness and moonlight like Nonna claimed. This all-too-human monster had broken into the catacombs and committed the vilest of acts. He tasted the blood of the dead. Before I could heed the warnings my grandmother had beaten into our thick skulls from birth, I was out of my hiding spot, screaming like I was a feral creature of the night. Stop! Either from the raw command in my voice, or more likely the ear-splitting shrillness of it. The stranger jumped back a few feet, his movement almost too fast to detect. There was something else, odd, something... I grabbed my cornicello and concentrated on his aura. His luccicare wasn't lavender, but a shimmering, multi-toned black with specks of gold. It reminded me of Nonna's titanium quartz. I'd never seen anything like it before. He glanced from the kitchen knife I held to the body lying on the table, probably debating his next move. For the first time, I noticed the dagger in his hand. A gold snake with lavender eyes twined around its hilt, fangs bared. It was beautiful. Wicked. Deadly. For a moment, I thought he'd aim it straight at my heart. Stay away from her, I warned, taking a small step in his direction.
or I'll scream loud enough to summon every fratello in this building. It was a lie. The whole Brotherhood was out doing their duties for Santa Rosalia. As far as I knew, he and I were the only ones in the entire monastery. Deep as we were within the catacombs, no one would hear my screams if he lunged for me. But I wasn't defenseless. My hand dropped from my amulet and moved toward the moon-blessed chalk Nonna insisted we carry in our secret skirt pockets, ready to fall to my knees and draw a protection circle. It would work against a human just as well as it would protect against any supernatural threat. I hesitated just in case he was a witch hunter, and using magic gave my secret away. He opened his mouth about to say whatever it was a person said after they were caught licking blood from the dead, when his gaze landed on the area near my chest. The heat of his focus almost singed my dress off. He'd tasted blood, then had the nerve to stare at me like I was another delicacy put on this earth for his pleasure alone. Or was that...
Liar. His voice was deep, rough, and elegant at once. A serrated blade wrapped in silk.
All the hair on my arms rose. Before I unleashed a torrent of curses, he did the last thing I expected. He turned on his heel and fled. In his haste to leave, his serpent dagger clattered to the floor. He either didn't notice or didn't care. I waited, kitchen knife pointed in front of me, breathing hard. I didn't hear retreating footsteps, only a slight crackle, like fire. There and gone too quickly to be sure. If he charged from the shadows, I'd defend myself through any means necessary. No matter if the thought made me queasy. Another moment passed. Then another. I strained against the loud roaring of my pulse, listening for any signs of footsteps. There was no sound aside from my frantic heartbeat. He didn't return. I contemplated chasing him, but found neither my breath nor my shaking legs were cooperating. I glanced down, wondering what had made him appear so uneasy, and saw my cornicello glinting in the darkness. How? The silent calling was back in force, urging me to listen closely. I shoved the whispers into the deepest recesses of my mind. I didn't need any more distractions. It took a few moments of slowing my pulse to realize the body on the table wasn't where the Brotherhood brought new corpses to be washed and prepared for mummification. In fact, this room didn't appear to be used for anything. My attention drifted around the chamber, noticing a thick layer of dust. Aside from the stone altar set in the middle, it was a small room carved from limestone. There were no shelves, or crates, or storage. It smelled of mold and stale air, as if it had been sealed off for hundreds of years and had only recently been opened. The must was a much stronger scent than the earlier faint aroma of time. An uncomfortable prickle began at the top of my spine and worked its way to my toes. Now that the stranger was gone, there was no doubt the body was calling me, which was never a positive sign. I hadn't had the pleasure of speaking with the dead before, and didn't really find the thought all too appealing now. I wanted to run away, and definitely not peer under the shroud, but couldn't. I gripped my knife, and forced myself to walk over to the corpse, obeying that silent, insistent tug, cursing my conscience the whole way. Before I looked at the body, I snatched the stranger's dagger from the ground, replacing my flimsy kitchen knife with it. Its heft was a small comfort. If the blood-drinking deviant returned, I had a much better weapon to threaten him with. Feeling as comforted as I could, I turned to the covered body, finally giving in to its summoning. I permitted no fear to enter my heart as I wrenched the shroud back from its face. I was silent for an entire breath
before my scream shattered the tranquility of the monastery. Chapter 5. Magic is a living, breathing entity. It thrives on the energy you give it. Like all forces of nature, it is neither good nor bad. It simply becomes, based on the user's intent. Feed it love, and it blossoms and grows. Nourish it with hate, and it will deliver hate back to you tenfold. Notes from the Decalo Grimoire. The face I stared into was a mirror of my own. Brown eyes, dark brown hair,